You know that feeling, right? You leave your bike out, maybe it rains, and bam, these reddish-brown spots start showing up.
Oh, yeah, rust. Classic example.
Or, you know, you buy bananas, they're perfect, and slowly, spots, mushiness, even the smell changes. It's like everything around us is constantly shifting every second.
It really is, and that gets you thinking, doesn't it? What's actually causing these shifts? Are they all the same kind of change deep down?
Exactly. Which is why we dove into this specific chapter, changes around us, physical and chemical.
Right. And think of this chat as like a highlight reel. We're hitting the core ideas, the really important stuff from that chapter, just to help you quickly get a handle on it.
Yeah, our mission today is really to help you tell the difference between a physical change and a chemical one. We'll look at big examples like burning things, combustion, and even how we decide if change is good or bad.
Desirable or undesirable, yeah.
And we'll touch on those huge slow processes too, like weathering and erosion that shape the whole planet. So, okay, let's jump in and unpack this world of changes.
Sounds good. Where should we start?
Let's kick off with the absolute basics. What makes a physical change different from a chemical change? You might remember talking about things being reversible or irreversible before. This kind of builds on that.
Okay.
So a physical change, think of it like a substance just changing its outfit. Its physical properties might change shape, size, maybe color, if it's just mixing solid to liquid, that kind of thing.
But it's still the same stuff underneath.
Exactly. Crucially, no new substance is formed. Ice melts into water. Looks different, feels different, but it's still H2O, chemical identity, unchanged.
Gotcha.
And these changes are often reversible. You can freeze the water back to ice, right? Or if you dissolve salt in water, you can get the salt back by evaporating the water.
Right. That makes sense. They seem kind of temporary.
Usually, yeah. And importantly, the total amount of stuff, the mass, stays the same, and the energy involved is typically pretty small.
Okay. So what are some common examples we see?
Oh, tons. Melting ice, boiling water, steam condensing on a mirror, even dry ice vanishing into gas that's sublimation.
That's a cool one.
Isn't it? Or just, you know, tearing paper, crushing a can, stretching a rubber band, chopping wood, grinding flour.
So even though the shape or size changes drastically, it's still paper, still aluminum, still wood.
Precisely. Even dissolving sugar in your tea? Or mixing fruit for a salad. The sugar's still sugar, the grape's still a grape, it's just mixed together.
Okay, that costume change analogy is helpful, but you mentioned they're often reversible. What about tearing paper? Or, say, getting a haircut? You can't really untear it easily or stick the hair back on. Are those still physical?
That is a fantastic question, and yeah, it gets to the heart of it. Even though you can't practically put the paper back together perfectly, the actual substance of the paper, the cellulose molecules, haven't changed.
Ah, okay. So the change was caused by an outside force, not an internal chemical reaction.
You got it. The tearing was physical force. Same with the haircut. The hair itself is chemically unchanged, just shorter. So, hard to reverse doesn't automatically mean chemical.
That's a really key distinction.
So, if physical changes are about the surface, the appearance, chemical changes or chemical reactions are where the real deep transformation happens.
Right, this is where things actually become new substances.
Exactly. The original substances are fundamentally altered. They turn into something completely different with its own unique chemical makeup and properties. Atoms are rearranging, breaking old bonds, forming new ones.
So the absolute defining feature is new stuff is made.
That's the bottom line. And because new substances are formed, these changes are usually irreversible. You can't easily turn ash back into wood.
No way.
They tend to be permanent changes. And they often involve significant energy shifts. Burning wood gives off a lot of heat and light that's exothermic. Heat out.
Like a campfire.
Yep. But some chemical changes actually absorb heat, making things feel cold. Think of those instant cold packs. That's endothermic. Heat in.
Interesting. So the energy change is a big clue, too.
It often is, yeah. It suggests something fundamentally new is happening at the molecular level. But even with all this transformation, in a closed system, the total mass doesn't change. That's the law of conservation of mass still holding true.
Right. The atoms just rearrange. They don't disappear.
Exactly. So how can you, as an observer, spot signs that a chemical change might be happening? What are the clues?
Good question. What should we look for?
Well, are bubbles forming? Is a gas being produced? Like when you mix vinegar and baking soda, that fizz is carbon dioxide gas.
Okay. Gas production. What else?
How about a solid suddenly appearing out of a liquid? That's called a precipitate. like when lye water turns milky if you bubble CO2 through it.
Yeah, yes. Precipitate formation.
Or a really distinct change in color. Not just mixing paint, but like iron turning that reddish-brown rusty color.
That's a very obvious one.
Definitely. Or a change in smell. Food going bad has a very distinct, unpleasant odor. That's chemical breakdown.
Ugh, yeah. Spoiled milk.
Or the big ones. Production of heat and light. Burning anything a match, fireworks, that's a dead giveaway.
Heat and light, okay. Anything else?
Sometimes even sound. Like a little pop you might hear in some reactions.
Wow, okay. So lots of potential clues.
Yeah, and these chemical changes are everywhere. Burning wood, like we said. Rusting.
Mm-hmm.
Photosynthesis plants doing that incredible magic trick with sunlight, CO2, and water to make food and oxygen.
That's a huge one. Life depends on it.
Totally. Cooking an egg changes the proteins chemically. Baking bread involves chemical reactions.
Mm-hmm.
Digesting your food, that's a whole series of chemical changes.
Fruit ripening, too, right? Starch turning into sugar.
Yep. Or an Alka-Seltzer tablet fizzing in water.
Mm-hmm.
Even milk-curdling bacteria producing lactic acid. That's a chemical change.
You know, you mentioned fireworks earlier. Those amazing colors are all down to chemical changes. Different metal salts burning and giving off specific light. It's pretty spectacular.
It really is.
But it brings up a point. You listed color change as a clue. Is any color change definitely chemical, or is it more nuanced?
Good catch. No, not every color change means a chemical reaction happened. Like, if you dissolve blue Kool-Aid powder in water, the water turns blue. But the Kool-Aid molecules are still just Kool-Aid. They're just spread out.
So that's physical, like dissolving.
Yeah. Right. Or mixing yellow and blue paint gives you green, but it's still just a physical mixture of the yellow and blue pigment particles. The key question is always, did a new substance form?
Got it. That distinction is crucial.
Okay, so we've covered the basics of chemical changes. But there's one type that's so common and, well, powerful, that it deserves its own spotlight. Combustion.
Burning. Yeah, that's a big one.
Right, so combustion is basically a rapid chemical reaction. It happens between a substance, the fuel, and an oxidant, which is usually the oxygen in the air, and the result, lots of heat and light.
It's definitely a chemical change then. You start with fuel and oxygen, and you end up with completely different things, like carbon dioxide, water vapor, ash.
Exactly. And because it kicks out so much heat and light, it's strongly exothermic. We see it with wood, paper, petrol, natural gas, coal. Even some metals, like magnesium, burn really brightly.
But things like stone or glass, they don't burn. They're non-combustible.
Correct. And that crucial ingredient, the oxidant, is usually oxygen. It's the essential supporter of combustion. Without enough oxygen, a fire just can't keep going.
Makes sense.
And to really understand what makes a fire start and how to put one out, we often talk about the fire triangle. Have you heard of that?
I have. Yeah, it's about the three things you need, right?
Exactly. Three things needed at the same time for combustion to happen. First, you need a combustible substance, the fuel.
Like wood or gas. Okay.
Second, you need that supporter of combustion, usually oxygen from the air.
Got it. Fuel and oxygen.
And third, you need to reach the ignition temperature. That's the minimum temperature that substance needs to actually catch fire and start burning. You need enough heat.
Fuel, oxygen, heat, the fire triangle.
That's it.
And what's so useful about that idea is if you take away just one of those sides of the triangle, remove the fuel, cut off the oxygen, or cool it down below the ignition temperature, the fire goes out.
Precisely. That's the whole principle behind firefighting, isn't it? Water cools things down. Foam can smother a fire by cutting off oxygen.
Exactly. But, you know, thinking about burning, is all burning the same? Like, the sun is burning, but is that combustion like a campfire?
That's a great point to bring up. No, it's totally different. Our fires here on Earth are chemical reactions,
mm-hmm.
electrons rearranging, atoms bonding in new ways.
Okay.
The sun, though, that's nuclear fusion. Under incredible pressure and heat, hydrogen atoms are smashing together to form helium. It releases way, way more energy, and it doesn't need oxygen at all. It's a nuclear process, not chemical combustion.
Wow. Puts our little bonfires in perspective.
Doesn't it just? So, okay, we've got physical changes, chemical changes, combustion. It's amazing how these are all happening around us.
All the time.
But we don't just observe them, do we? We often judge them, categorize them based on how they affect us. Which brings us to desirable versus undesirable changes.
Right. Whether we want the change to happen or not.
Yeah. So desirable changes are the useful ones, the beneficial ones. Think about fruit ripening, delicious. Cooking food makes it edible and tasty.
milk turning into yogurt or cheese, maybe?
Perfect example, if that's what you want. Seeds sprouting into plants, photosynthesis feeding the planet, even charging your phone battery is a desirable change we rely on.
Makes sense. Useful stuff.
Then there are the undesirable changes. The harmful ones, the ones we wish wouldn't happen. Rusting, eating away at metal is a huge one.
That's a fortune.
Totally. Food spoiling, milk going sour when you didn't want it to, clothes wearing out, glass breaking.
Natural disasters too, like floods or droughts.
Absolutely. Those are massive undesirable changes. Pollution, forest fires, even tooth decay. And unfortunately, a lot of the really big undesirable changes these days are linked to us.
Human activity, yeah, like burning fossil fuels, putting extra CO2 into the atmosphere, leading to climate change.
Exactly. Or things like VOCs, volatile organic compounds from paint fumes causing air pollution. Mm-hmm. Human actions can definitely drive undesirable changes on a large scale.
It really makes you think about the impact, but can a single change be both? Like, good and bad, depending on how you look at it.
Oh, absolutely. Context is key. Think about a volcano erupting. Mm-hmm. Short term. Mm-hmm. Devastating. Ash clouds, lava flows, definitely undesirable for anyone nearby.
For sure.
But long term, over geological time, that volcanic ash breaks down and creates incredibly fertile soil, super desirable for farming later on.
Ah, interesting. So perspective and time scale matter.
They really do. And it's also worth remembering, not all natural changes are good for us, like earthquakes. And certainly not all human-made changes are bad. Building shelters, developing medicines, those are incredibly desirable changes we've made happen.
Good point. It's not always black and white.
Okay, so from the fast reactions, let's zoom way out. Let's talk about changes that happen incredibly slowly, over maybe hundreds or thousands, even millions of years, the really big sculptors of our planet, weathering and erosion.
Ah, the geological timescale stuff.
Yeah. So first up is weathering. This is all about the breakdown of rocks, soil, minerals. But crucially, it happens in place, right where the rock is sitting. Scientists call it in situ. No movement is involved in weathering itself, just the breaking down.
Right, so it stays put while it breaks apart. What causes it?
Two main ways. There's physical weathering, also called mechanical weathering. This just breaks the rock into smaller pieces without changing its chemical composition.
Like hitting it with a hammer, but slower.
Kind of. Think temperature swings, making rock expand and contract, eventually cracking it. Or water getting into cracks, freezing, expanding frost wedging, that's powerful. Plant roots growing into crevices and forcing them apart. Even wind or water just physically grinding away at the surface abrasion.
Okay, so physical force is breaking it down. What's the other type?
That's chemical weathering. Here, the rock's actual chemical makeup does change. New substances are formed as the minerals react with things in the environment.
Like rusting, but on rocks.
Exactly. Oxidation is a great example. Iron minerals in rocks reacting with oxygen, basically rusting. Or hydrolysis, where water itself chemically reacts with minerals. Carbonation is another big one. Rainwater absorbs CO2, becomes slightly acidic, and can dissolve rocks like limestone. Acid rain accelerates this.
So chemical reactions are actually changing the rock material itself.
Precisely. Now, related to weathering, but different, is erosion.
Right. People often mix these two up.
They do. Erosion is the process where the broken down bits of rock and soil, the stuff created by weathering, get moved away, transported from one place to another by natural forces.
So weathering is the breakdown. Erosion is the carrying away.
That's the key difference. Weathering breaks it, erosion takes it. They often happen together, one after the other, but they are distinct processes.
And what are the main things that cause erosion, the agents of erosion?
Water is a huge one. Raindrops hitting the ground, water flowing in sheets, cutting little channels called rills, then bigger gullies, powerful rivers carving valleys, waves crashing on coastlines.
Water in all its forms. What else?
Wind is big, especially in dry areas. It can pick up sand and dust, blast it against rocks, sculpt features like dunes, glaciers, huge rivers of ice grinding across the land, scraping and moving vast amounts of material. And even just gravity, pulling loose material downhill in landslides or rock falls.
Like mass wasting, yeah.
Right, and eventually these forces lose energy, and they drop the material they were carrying. That's called deposition.
It's amazing when you think about the power of these slow, relentless processes, like the Grand Canyon just carved out by the Colorado River over millions of years. That's erosion on an epic scale.
Truly mind-blowing.
And even wind, seeming less dramatic, can shift millions of tons of sand in deserts every year. It really highlights why distinguishing weathering breakdown from erosion transport is important. And while, yeah, human activity can speed up erosion badly, natural erosion is fundamental. It shapes landscapes, creates habitats, even helps form the soil we need.
It really does.
So maybe something for you listening to think about. Look around your own area. How have these slow, massive changes, weathering and erosion, shaped the hills, valleys, coastlines, even the soil beneath your feet?
That's a great thought. So, wrapping this up, what's the big picture here? We've covered a lot in this deep dive, haven't we? From super fast chemical reactions to these incredibly slow geological changes.
We really have. And I think the main takeaway is that understanding these different types of change, physical, chemical, fast, slow, desirable, undesirable, gives you a much better toolkit for making sense of the world around you. It's always in flux.
Yeah, from seeing salt dissolve in your soup pot to thinking about how mountains get worn down over millennia, it connects a small scale to the massive scale.
Exactly. It's all part of the same dynamic system.
So as you go about your day, maybe pause and think. When you see a candle burning, can you spot both the physical change, the wax melting, and the chemical change, the wick and vapor burning?
Or when you look at a landscape, think about those slow, unseen forces of weathering and erosion that shaped it, and how that might even connect to the food you eat, grown in soil formed over ages.
With this deeper understanding, how many more changes around us can you now recognize and maybe even appreciate a little more?